Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavascha Sri Rupam Sahagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitham Stam Sajiva Sadvaitam Sadvaditam Purijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Kuram Sahagana Lavitam Sri Vishakam Vitham Stam Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo
Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 4, the Hamsaguya Prayers, which are sung by Daksha. Now, on the board here, you have 35 to 39, which is a description of the Lord's beautiful form. There's no purport to that verse, and the next purport is at 41. So, you guys can choose. I can just talk on these verses without a purport, just about Krishna's beauty, or we can go up to the next purport on 41 and talk about also Daksha's reaction to that beauty. So, you decide. How many people want to just do these?
Yeah, such beautiful verses.
Just those, okay. Do we have any vote for going up to the next purport? Yes?
I think we should do both.
You mean we should do both? All right, well.
It's very long.
The verse is very long. Of course, there's no purport. All right, well, I'll concentrate on that and try to do both. But someone should change the number there, otherwise people get mixed up. Whoever writes on the board will get mixed up tomorrow. So they should change it to 41. Just okay. Whoever does that.
How do you manage to be onto it?
Huh?
How do you manage to be very onto it?
She's very onto it. She's.
She knows everything that's going on.
She's like the pillar of the temple, isn't she?
Yeah, she is actually.
What are we going to do when you're not on the planet anymore and you're here? The whole place is going to crumble. You have to train up your successor or successors. Probably take 10 people. Seriously. Keep on doing what you're doing and keep the place together. Madhuri Devi Dasi Ki. So first we're going to read from Arisari's Transcendental Diary. Prabhupada listened carefully to the letter, which was actually from B.B. Lyle Bhatnagar, secretary to His Holiness Goswami Tilkalat Sri Govindalji Maharaj. Referring to the article in BTG, the letter said, Maharaj Sri has been pained to note the highly disparaging remarks. Maharaj Sri has noted such disparaging remarks in the book Chaitanya Charitamrita, which obviously had been made by the author thereof with a view to boost up the personality of Sri Chaitanya without even looking at Srimad Vallabhacharya Ji's commentary called Subodhini on the Bhagavat, which itself has considered all previous commentaries, including the one by Sridhar Swami, and has shown specifically the nature of the error committed by the previous commentators, including Sridhar Swami. As you know, Sridhar Swami, thought profoundly learned, only bore the name of Swami and was never regarded as a master or lord by the successive commentators, and not the least by Srimad Vallabhacharya Ji Maharaj. That's there's a whole history behind this. And how the followers of Vallabhacharya view the statements in Chaitanya Charitamrita and Srila Prabhupada's purports about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's relationship with Vallabhacharya. And there was something published in Back to Godhead magazine also, which criticized Vallabhacharya. I don't mind children, as long as they're not screaming. And I ask everybody else, please, to be tolerant of children, because you know what? There's a place where Prabhupada said, I am completely confident that I'm going back to Godhead. Who here can raise their hand and say that? Okay. So if we're not completely confident we're going back to Godhead, and if we believe what Krishna says in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, then in 50 or 60 years, that might be us. Okay, so please treat the children the way you want to be treated. Obviously, if they scream and disturb everybody. Anyway, the thing with Vallabhacharya is that's a long, we could have a whole class just on Vallabhacharya and his relationship to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But in general, we try to keep good relationships with the Vallabha Sampradaya. And of course, course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Navadvipa Mahatma talks about how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was actually appeared to each of the acharyas of the different sampradayas, and that they're all actually connected with him. So we take the situation between Balabha and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as an instructive pastime, not to criticize one. I'm just thinking how Madhva doesn't discuss the Brahman Vimohan Leela, where Lord Brahma becomes bewildered and steals the cowherd boys and the calves, because Brahma is the head of the sampradaya, therefore he doesn't want to discuss it. So sometimes there's this feeling, which is okay, that this is our guru or this is our head of the sampradaya, and if there's some. But we don't mind. I mean, Prabhupada talks about how Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati chastised him, and we don't mind repeating that story. You know that story? Prabhupada was sitting in one of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati's classes. He was sitting in the back, and some elderly gentleman who couldn't hear very well leaned over to Prabhupada and asked Prabhupada to repeat something that Bhaktisiddhanta had said. And this gentleman was giving regular donations to Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati. And Bhaktisiddhanta got very angry at both of them. Why are you talking during the class? And he said, don't think you have purchased me with your whatever he was giving, 500 rupees a month. He said, don't think you have purchased me. And he chastised Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said that that was one of the highlights of his life, being chastised by his spiritual master. So we don't mind repeating that story. We're not embarrassed to repeat a story where our founder, Acharya, was chastised by his guru. Actually, being chastised by the Supreme Lord is a very wonderful thing. In the Bhagavatam, there's a story about Lord Shiva being chastised by Krishna, by Vishnu. You know that story? Lord Shiva heard the story of the churning of the ocean of milk. And he came with his wife to see Lord Vishnu, and he said, I heard that you appeared as a woman. I want to see it. And Lord Vishnu says, I don't think that's a very good idea. And Lord Shiva says, no, I really want to. And Lord Vishnu says, I really don't think we should do this. He says, no, I insist. Okay. And the Lord appeared as Mohini. And Lord Shiva became so bewildered that even though his wife was right there, I mean, generally if your wife's right there, you know, you don't go running after another woman in her presence, generally speaking. Most people don't do that. It's interesting, you see in some marriages, as soon as the husband's talking to a woman, no matter what woman, how old she is, what the conversation is about, you see the wife has some kind of radar and she's right at his side. You ever seen couples like that? I don't know if you have couples like that. All of a sudden she's there. Okay. So even though his wife was right there, still he started running after the Lord, the Supreme Lord, who's of course the all-attractive, which we'll be talking about today. In the form of a woman, he became... he lost all of his sense, and she took him running through the ashrams of the sages even, you know, and she was naked. So all the sages get to see this, you know, Lord Shiva following this beautiful naked woman through. It's like, wow, look at that. As an instruction, of course. And then later when Lord Shiva came to his senses, he was very happy to have been embarrassed by the Lord. He was very happy. Oh, my Lord has defeated me. And it made him feel very joyful. So we're not ashamed of such stories. But sometimes persons may think, oh, my guru or my leader has become embarrassed or humiliated, and therefore these things shouldn't be repeated. Okay. So 35-39. Pradura shikuru shesta bhagavan bhakta vatsala. Krita para suparnam se pralad basta mahabuja chakra shanka shicharmeshu danupasha gada gara pita vasa ganashama prasana vanake vadanekshana vana mala vitango lasachir vasa kostuba mahakiri tekataka spura makara kundala. The makara kundala. Yes. I remember we were looking at the makaras on your mother's bangles? Mm-hmm. Makara kundala means the makara earrings. This is all description of the Lord. I know I don't pronounce Sanskrit very well, but I hope you can understand some of what I'm saying in Sanskrit. Kancha gulila valaya nipurangada bhushita. Okay, angada is the limbs, bhushita. Okay, let me have this last one on there. Okay. Trilokya. Mohanam, Rupam, Chi Bhuvaneshvara.
Vito.
Narada.
Nandadyai.
Arsadyai.
Sura.
Yutapai. Stuyamano. Nugayadvi. Siddha. Gandhara. Charanai. Trilokya Mohanam. Vibhratri Bhuvaneshwaraha Krito Narada Nandadyai Arsadai Surayutapai Stuyamano Nugayadvi Siddha Gandharva Charanai. Shrishtuk Uvacha. Shri Sukadeva Goswami said, Iti, thus, Stutaha, being praised, Samstuvataha, of Daksha who is offering prayers, Saha, that Supreme Personality of Godhead, Tasmin, in that, Aghamarshane, holy place celebrated as Agamarshana. Pradurasit appeared. Kurushrestha, O best of the Kuru dynasty. Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhaktivatsalaha, who was very kind to his devotees. Pritapadaha, whose lotus feet were placed. Suparna Amse, on the shoulders of his carrier Garuda. Palamba.
Palamba.
Very long.
Very long.
Asta Mahabhujaha.
Asta Mahabhujaha.
Possessing eight mighty arms.
Possessing eight mighty arms.
Chakra.
Chakra.
Disc.
Disc.
Shankha.
Shankha.
Kangshel.
Kangshel.
Asti.
Asti.
Sword.
Sword.
Charma.
Charma.
Shield.
Shield.
Issue.
Issue.
Arrow.
Dhanuhu,
bow,
pasha,
rope, gada, club, daraha, holding, pitavasaha, with yellow garments, ganashamaha, whose bodily hue was intense blue-black, prasanna, very cheerful, vadana, whose face, Ikshana, and glance, Vanamala, by a garland of forest flowers, Nivita Angaha, whose body was adorned from the neck down to the feet, Lasat, shining, Srivatsa Kostubaha, the jewel known as Kastuba and the mark of Srivatsa. Mahakirita,
Maha,
a very large and gorgeous helmet. Katakaha, a circle, spurat, glittering. Makara Kundalaha, earrings resembling sharks. Yeah, they resemble sharks. It's funny that sometimes when Prabhupada comes to Sanskrit words that have no English equivalent, he just repeats the Sanskrit word. Like there's descriptions of flower gardens where they'll just say, you know, the same tree or the same flower in Sanskrit. But makara, he almost always translates as sharks, or sometimes dolphins. But actually they're neither. They're not any creature that modern science is familiar with. They're some sort of an amalgamation of a crocodile, an elephant, a shark, and they have a nose like an elephant. And you see makaras especially on ladies' bangles. Just like we saw in your mother's bangles. So if you've ever seen the bangles, when they come together, there's this, they go like this. You ever seen it? That's a makara. So that's the amakara is the carrier of Cupid, and also sometimes Ganga is said to ride on a makara. Kanchi, with a belt. Anguliya, finger rings. Valaya, bracelets. Nupura, ankle bells, angada, upper arm bracelets, bhushitaha, decorated, trilokya mohanam, captivating the three worlds, ruham, his bodily features, bibrat, shining, tribhuvana, of the three worlds, ishvaraha, the supreme lord, Vrittaha, surrounded. Narada, by exalted devotees headed by Narada. Nanda Adyai, and others like Nanda. That's not Nanda Maharaj and Vrinda. Parsadai, who are all eternal associates. Surayuttapai, as well as by the heads of the demigods. Stuyamanaha, being glorified. Anugayadvi, singing after him. Siddha Gantharva Charanai, by the Siddhas, Gantharvas, and Charanas. Okay, somebody tell me something about this verse. What's this verse about? Tell me something. Sounds like what? Like the Damodar prayer's description of Krishna. Some description from this verse before we read the translation. Something you remember. Yes?
Several words that say shining or glittering.
Shining or glittering.
Yellow
garments. Pita Vasa.
Blue black color.
Ganesha.
Yes, by Jayanti Dharan.
the Srivatsamarak, the Vajayanti garland, and the garland was made out of what kind of flowers?
Forest.
Forest flowers, Vanamala. Vana means forest. Holding disc, conch, shield, what else? Rope. Bow and arrow. Bow. Anything else?
Sword.
Translation. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari, who is extremely affectionate to his devotees, was very pleased by the prayers offered by Daksha, and thus he appeared at that holy place known as Agamarshana. O Maharaj Parikshit, best of the Kuru dynasty, the Lord's lotus feet rested on the shoulders of his carrier, Garuda, and he appeared with 8 long, mighty, very beautiful arms." How many arms do you have? "In his hands he held a disc, conch shell, sword, shield, arrow, bow, rope, and club. In each hand a different weapon, all brilliantly shining. His garments were yellow, and his bodily hue deep bluish. His eyes and face were very cheerful, and from his neck to his feet hung a long garland of flowers. His chest was decorated with the Kastuba jewel and the mark of Sri Vatsa. On his head was a gorgeous round helmet, and his ears were decorated with earrings resembling sharks. All these ornaments were uncommonly beautiful. The Lord wore a golden belt on his waist, bracelets on his arms, rings on his fingers, and ankle bells on his feet. Thus decorated by various ornaments, Lord Hari, who is attractive to all living entities of the three worlds, is known as Purushottama, the best personality. He was accompanied by great devotees like Narada, Nanda, and all principal demigods, led by the heavenly king Indra, and the residents of various upper planetary systems such as Siddhaloka, Gandharvaloka, and Charanaloka. Situated on both sides of the Lord, and behind him as well, these devotees offered him prayers continuously." So I think what I'll do out of respect for Maki is we'll talk about this, and if we have time, we'll go on to the next point. Okay? Is that all right? But we may have something else. Says, thinking when reading this, how when I was 16, I went on a bicycle tour of Western Canada with a youth group. And we were going in Jasper Banff National Park. Have you ever been there? Or Canadian? You have any other Canadians? Have you ever been there? Beautiful place, isn't it? It's just absolutely gorgeous. I remember at one point at Lake Louise, which is a lake formed by glaciers and there's mountains around it, we went on a boat to a little island in the middle. And I remember going there and thinking I could just stay here forever. And then I realized, no, I couldn't. I want people and activity. It was a very nice realization I had, which helped me when I later read how Prabhupada said that impersonalism isn't satisfying. I remember that time on the island of Lake Louise. Anyway, mostly we were riding bicycles through the mountains, which is very intense going up and a lot of fun going down. And sometimes we rode horses through the mountains. And there were a few times that we climbed mountains. So there was one, it was the first time I'd ever climbed a mountain. So I was climbing this mountain. It was a lot of work. And you get to the top, and what do you climb a mountain for? To see the view. Right? To see the beautiful view. Actually, just did this recently in Slovenia. We were already on a mountain, and we made a little climb to see the view of all the surrounding countries. Anyway, we got up to this mountain, and we saw the view, and it was beautiful. It was, what do they call a beautiful view?
Picturesque.
What else?
Bird's eye.
A bird's eye view, yeah. Breathtaking. We're thinking of breathtaking because that's kind of what's going to happen for Daksha. Like, oh! Wow! What a view. I do remember thinking that it wasn't worth the climb and that I wouldn't do that again. So the next time everybody climbed the mountain, I stayed at a car park in the car we had rented, and an elk came and said hello to me in the car. That's another story. But anyway, people go to great trouble to see something beautiful. I mean, we really went to a lot of trouble. 4 hours climbing up this mountain, quite literally we could have been killed. You know, just to see something beautiful. When I just came here to New Zealand, I first went from the Big Island to Honolulu, and then from there, from here. So in the Honolulu airport, we're waiting in line, and I was saying to some people, okay, well, what are you going to New Zealand for? Oh, we've heard it's very beautiful. And I said, well, actually, no offense to the Kiwis here, but I said, Hawaii is more beautiful than New Zealand. You know, why are you taking so much trouble? So they're taking so much trouble. They saved their money. They said, we've saved our money for many, many years to make this trip. We're trying to go to the most beautiful places in the world. And people are always wanting to see something beautiful. But unfortunately, beautiful things get old, don't they? Last July, I guess, I was on Vancouver Island, maybe June. And Vancouver Island is such a beautiful place. You can see the mountains across the water in America, Mount Olympus. You see it kind of through the clouds, and there's all these pine trees. It's a very different, beautiful than Hawaii. Hawaii is all tropical and flowers and parrots and, you know, turquoise ocean. It's very beautiful on Vancouver Island. But the people who live there hardly notice it anymore. It becomes old. You know, after all, it's just where you live. So people are flying here to New Zealand to see the beauty, and you guys who live here, it's just, you know, it's where I live. Yeah, there's the ocean. Big deal. You know, it becomes stale. Or we're donated this building in Detroit, Fisher Mansion, where I served for about 10 years. And it was built by Lawrence Fisher of Body by Fisher, the car company, very wealthy man. And the floors, which is really dumb. But anyway, the floors have all these, it's all made of mosaic tiles with indentations, and in the indentations is 24 karat gold. The reason it's dumb is because as you walk on it, you wear off the gold. So the only place there's still gold on the floors is on the edges. And then there's also the ceiling. I mean, here we have paintings on the ceilings. There, each part of the ceiling is hand-carved, and there's semi-precious jewels and gold in the whole place. Every ceiling in that place is incredible. The ceiling of the temple room is just like you can see the sky through the windows. Well, the ceiling's painted like that. And there's a dome, so it looks like the sky. And the whole building is gorgeous, and people come and pay a lot of money for tours. And when you first go there, you're thinking, you know, breathtaking again. And after a while, it's just, you know, where you go. It's just the temple, yeah. The ceiling looks like the sky, and there's gold on the floor. And, you know, it's not a very big deal. But still, we're looking for beauty. We're all looking to be captivated by beauty, to have our breath taken away. And that is because, really, we're all looking for Krishna, who is unlimitedly beautiful. And Krishna says that all glorious, marvelous things in the creation are just a little spark of his splendor. Though the whole material world is just a little spark. If you take together all the beautiful things just on this planet, there are so many. Beautiful waterfalls and mountains, or beautiful creatures like parrots and peacocks, or very beautiful people who are on the covers of magazines, and these beautiful sunsets. And you're just on this planet, and this is such a little tiny, 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 tiny planet. This is a tiny planet. This whole, just like there's these small ants here. Yeah? So this whole planet is no more like an ant, like a little ant in this room. Our planet is just like a little ant in the universe. And on other planets, there's so many more glorious and wonderful and beautiful things. And this universe is just a tiny bubble coming out from Mahavishnu. So just one little tiny universe. And then what to speak of the spiritual world, the glory of the spiritual world, which can't even be imagined. But Krishna is the reservoir of all that beauty. So how can you imagine the beauty of God? There's some comparison here. Ganesham. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says, you can talk about like a rain cloud or like a tamal tree or intensely blue-black color, but some of you are wearing blue and black. It's not like, but Krishna's color is like that. It's the color of love. So who can understand this? What's really wonderful about the Vedic scriptures is that there are such descriptions at all. that in the other religious systems of the world, which are genuine religious systems, those descriptions are not there. They're just not there. It'll say how God appeared as a pillar of smoke and fire, or a burning bush that didn't burn up. I mean, it says in Exodus that Moses saw God face to face, like a friend speaks with another friend. But what is his face? It's not described. The only place there's any description is in the Song of Solomon, which is actually quite similar to some of these descriptions in the Bhagavatam. But the Bible scholars have decided that such descriptions are just metaphors, that they don't really describe God. Just like Sankaracharya also, he went through the Vedas and he said, all these descriptions of personality are metaphorical. So we can imagine that there are people who go through the Bhagavatam and say, oh, well, this isn't really God. Just something for you to fix your mind on. That's what the impersonalists say. They say, really, all these descriptions of the Lord are in ignorance, that the ultimate reality is just formless light that manifests as Ishwara. If to somebody in ignorance, it's a manifestation of ignorance. So they interpret like that. But such descriptions, basically, as I said, they don't even exist. And in the world, many people will say they love God, but how do you love God unless you have some knowledge of God? And particularly, we tend to love something that's beautiful. I mentioned in the loft the other day, I was talking to one devotee who's been helping me with my project. Oh, how's it going? And he said, oh, I just decided I want to enter the Grihastha ashram. And I said, oh, maybe I know some nice girls. What are you looking for? He said, well, she has to be very brahminical. She has to not want to increase my material entanglement, which I thought was really funny. He said, that's not possible. He said, not too much of a stream. And then he said, but I said, well, what about this girl? I showed him a few pictures. He said, no, she's got to be really pretty. It's interesting, though. I was looking at some photographs of former students of mine who are now in their 30s. And that kind of beauty just doesn't last, you know. You know, some people, when they're 16 or 15, they're very attractive. And when they get to be 35, they look and go, whoa, how is that the same person? What to speak of, some of them had their mothers in the picture. It's like, wow, she used to be a very beautiful girl. So generally we're attracted to external beauty, but also we're attracted to beauty of character. And if a person has a very beautiful character, then physically they'll also appear very beautiful to us. The point is we're attracted by beauty. Of course, different people have different standards of what is beautiful. What's beautiful to one is ugly to another, depending on what modes are covering their mentality. But we feel love for someone or something that we consider to be beautiful, whether externally beautiful or internally beautiful, or both. That's natural. And of course, and the loved one to us looks very beautiful. So how to love God without understanding his qualities? Very difficult. And therefore, people who talk about love of God and don't know anything of the beauty of the Lord have a very difficult time living a life of love of God. They end up instead living a life, maybe, of humanitarian love. Because how do they express their love for God? It's very hard. I'm reading this, I was thinking about when I worked in a state school, the woman who shared the office with me was a very nice lady and a real gung-ho Christian. And she used to play modern Christian music all the time in the office, so I got to learn a number of the Christian songs. And one of them was Oh Beautiful One, You Know I Love You, speaking, I assume, to Jesus. Beautiful One I Love, Beautiful One I Adore, Beautiful One My Soul Does Sing, was the song. But I was thinking, they really don't know anything about the beauty of God. You know, this ever-fresh youth, and so playful. You know, how he's riding on this big eagle that flies through outer space. You know, he's this youthful, playful person. And very affectionate, very kind, and very cheerful. So, of course, just having this knowledge is very wonderful, but we also want to use this knowledge by meditating on the form of the Lord. That should be just like if you love someone in this world, you'll always be meditating on their form. It's natural, right? If this devotee finds his beautiful girl, then he'll always be thinking about her. This for a while, not forever. We'll get boring after a while, and after a while she won't be so pretty either. But at least for a while, he'll be meditating on her, right? Without a doubt. That's love. That's attachment. When we say, I'm going to meditate on Krishna, I'm attached to Krishna, I want to be conscious of Krishna, we should be thinking about Krishna. The Prabhupada says, when you chant Hare Krishna, immediately, you naturally think of Krishna. What is his form? What is his, what are his activities? So that should be throughout the day. Just, I mean, if ordinary people can do that materially, then why can't we do that? There's some ordinary person out there in the world, that the Pukikos are doing that, for instance. They're meditating on the beautiful female Pukiko, and if you don't believe me, you can spend a little time on the deck outside. They're meditating like that. Oh, that beautiful Pukiko bird. When will she be mine? That they are. And the human beings also, they're thinking, you know, everyone has in their office the little picture of their wife and children or their husband or whatever. Now, they're meditating on the form of their loved one. The Prabhupada says we all know what is a sakti, we all know what is attachment. So we need to become attached to Krishna. And therefore these descriptions are there, as Prabhupada says, to captivate us, but also to provide a vehicle for our meditation. And you can say, well, wait a minute now, if I'm just meditating on this form, I just read this, but I haven't actually seen Krishna, then how am I really going to meditate? It's somewhat difficult. But Lord Kapiladeva says that one uses the mind as a hook to capture the word. And just like we were reading last time about the fire in the wood, that you get the fire out of the wood, and then what does the fire do to the wood? It burns the wood. It burns the wood. Because liberation is dissolution of the subtle body. What's causing us to transmigrate? Our mind, mostly. It's a subtle body. Our desires and our impressions within the mind that's causing us to take birth after birth. Right? That's the. So people who are really suffering, sometimes they think if they kill their body, their suffering will stop. And there's all this assisted suicide propaganda now for people who are terminally ill or whatever. But the cause of our suffering and the cause of our being in this world is not the body. It's the mind. It's the impressions in the mind. Therefore, when the mind is filled up with Krishna consciousness, eventually there's no more material mind. It's finished. That's liberation. So what dissolves the material mind is using the material mind to think about spiritual topics. By using the material mind to think of spiritual topics, the mind, the material mind itself dissolves. Just like with wood, you get the fire from wood, it burns up the wood. Shiva Ramaraj very nicely explains this in his, what's it called, Sudha Bhakti Chintamani. And of course, there's a technical philosophical explanation throughout the book. And then for Kali Yuga people like me, you know how in Kali Yuga, the women, the Shudras, and the unqualified children of the higher caste, they learn much more through stories than through philosophy. You've heard that, right? So I'm definitely in that category. And so at the end of the book, Maharaj tells the same philosophy through a story. The story of this devotee who comes to the movement and gradually progresses through the stages of Krishna consciousness. And as he gets to the stage of nishtha, being fixed in meditation, then he's always meditating on the form of the Lord within his mind, using his mind. And gradually that meditation becomes more and more and more and more and more concentrated, as Rupa Goswami describes in Bhakti Prasadamita Sindhu. And finally he enters into a state of samadhi, where he loses all consciousness, all awareness of where his external body is, what time it is, anything, and he's just absorbed in Rupa, but it's still happening with his mind. And from that stage, the whole world itself reveals the form and the pastimes of the Lord. When Maharaj said to me about this when I was meeting with him in Hungary last time, He said that is the difference between spirit and spiritualized matter. So by fully spiritualizing our mind, eventually the full spirit is revealed to us. So that is our process. Therefore, we should meditate on this, even though, yes, we're doing it with the mind, and even though there may be some discrepancies that attracts Krishna. Oh, you're thinking about me. We're all like that. It said, right, Prabhupada says in the description of the fight between Krishna and Jambavan that Krishna has all the propensities of a human being. Oh, we're all like that. If someone's thinking about us, aren't we interested? Unless they're thinking about having hurt us. Even then we may be interested, but we maybe want to try to neutralize them. Don't you say that to your relatives and friends? I'm thinking about you, I'm missing you, right? Isn't that? So Krishna also likes that. Suppose you talk to your friends, I say, yeah, I never think about you. Even if it's true, we don't say that, do we? You know, we haven't seen somebody for 5 years, we haven't thought of them for 5 years, and we go, oh, I missed you so much. Can you imagine saying to someone, yeah, I didn't miss you at all, I never thought about you once. I mean, throughout your existence, I saw you right now. So Krishna wants us to think about it with the facility that we have. And then someday he will come and show us his form in full realization. So now there I've gone on. We didn't get to talk about what Daksha did and how Daksha felt about the form. So that can be for tomorrow. But I'll mention just super briefly that please don't think that just because one sees God that one automatically has to be pure or surrender. Even if one sees God and experiences ecstasy, as we'll see, doctors going to experience ecstasy, one always has free will. And one can always choose not to serve the Lord even after seeing his beauty and his grandeur, and even after feeling ecstasy upon doing so. Therefore, the demons see him and still they don't surrender. Or doctor who's serving them, a demon. He also chooses to maintain his material desires and his material life. So our choice of how to respond is always there. Okay? Questions, comments? Yes,
please. I was just thinking about the question of how one seems to find contradictory aspects in God, like, for instance, here he's kind of smiling very charmingly, but he's got a whole arsenal of deadly weapons. And usually people say that, you know, I mean, it's a fact when Krishna came, he devoted most of his time to killing demons. So they say he did this all love, and at the same time he's like creating oceans or rivers of blood. So how does he, or how does the Lord accommodate all those contradictory qualities?
So you have to remember that Krishna is a young boy. I don't know, maybe you were different, but did you ever play like shoot 'em up games when you were a little boy? Was that fun? So Krishna's also like that. When he does it, he really does it. Or, I mean, there are more girls now playing video games, but still, most of the players of the games are men. That's Krishna's mentality. Ultimately, he's in Goloka Vrindavan, where there's no demons and no fighting. He wrestles with the boys. But even that's very playful. It's also very playful and very loving. Nobody's really getting hurt. I mean, I guess if you're in paintball, people do get bruises. But it's something like that. You know, it's just sportive. You know, if you're playing a video game with your friends, nobody's really getting hurt. Just a game. Not only does nobody really get hurt, but Krishna liberates them. So when Krishna's fighting with demons, he gives them the greatest benefit. But it's fun. And Krishna likes to have fun in all kinds of ways, not just one way. He's not boring. He's not just long. You know, if you you love your children, you might want to go and play a competitive game with them. Didn't you ever do that? My mother-in-law's in the hospital, and my sister-in-law was saying how to cheer her up, she plays Scrabble games with her. You don't know what Scrabble is, like a word game. And sometimes she wins, and sometimes my mother-in-law wins. So why are they playing a competitive game if there's love? She's trying to beat her mother at the game. Why? It's also fun, isn't it? Isn't it fun? Father takes his sons out and plays tennis with them. So that's also Krishna's enjoyment. It's not, there's no malice. Suspired when Krishna and Arjuna were chasing after Ashwatthama, that Arjuna's eyes were like red hot balls of copper, and the Lord's eyes were like lotuses. And Prabhupada said, this is the difference between the Lord and the living entity, that the Lord, even when angry, is still very kind and merciful and loving. And it's all sport. And for the living entities who are in love with him, it's also sport. And for those who hate him, they don't perceive it as sport. But that's their, as I say in modern psychology, that's their problem. You know, the living entity who does is not surrendered to Krishna. They're choosing to see the Lord in a way that he doesn't intend. They're choosing to see him as an enemy. He said, okay, you know, you want to see me like that, I'll happy to appear to you like that, but that's not his mood. It's interesting because, you know, there are some religious systems where they practically only think of God like that. They think of God as some kind of warrior, you know. And then there's other systems of religion where they just think of God as this, you know, gentle, loving. But even the people who talk about Jesus like God, I mean, he went in the temple and threw out all the money changers and overthrew the tables and threw out everything. I mean, he was pretty aggressive sometimes. So he wasn't just... And he said some pretty heavy things to people. Said this one man, follow me. And he said, well, I've got to bury my father. He just died. Jesus says, let the dead bury their dead. Come with me. It's pretty intense. And thank you. Somebody else? Yes? That's also a makara. Yeah, you often see a makara. That looks like a peacock. But yeah, there's Krishna often has fruits with the makara. Mm-hmm. Anybody else?
Yeah.
Yes. So why don't we each pick some part of this description that we'll meditate on for the day? Can you do that, each of us?
Mm-hmm.
Something in this description? Should I read through it again? I'll read the description again and then pick one thing that you'll take. Okay, today I'm going to keep bringing my mind, what does Krishna say in the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, from wherever and wherever the mind wanders to its flickering and unsteady nature, one should certainly withdraw it and fix it upon itself. Okay, Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, the Supreme Personality of God in Hari, who is extremely affectionate to his devotees, was very pleased by the prayers offered by Daksha, and thus he appeared at that holy place known as Agamasana, Agamarsana. While Maharaj Pariksit, best of the Kuru dynasty, the Lord's lotus feet rested on the shoulders of his carrier, Garuda, and he appeared with 8 long, mighty, very beautiful arms. In his hands he held a disc, conch shell, sword, shield, arrow, bow, rope, and club, in each hand a different weapon, all brilliantly shining. His garments were yellow, and his bodily hue deep bluish. His eyes and face were very cheerful, and from his neck to his feet hung a long garland of flowers. His chest was decorated with the Kaustubha jewel and the mark of Shivatsa. On his head was a gorgeous round helmet, and his ears were decorated with earrings resembling sharks. All these ornaments were uncommonly beautiful. The Lord wore a golden belt on his waist, bracelets on his arms, rings on his fingers, and ankle bells on his feet. Thus decorated by various ornaments, Lord Hari, who is attractive to all the living entities of the three worlds, is known as Purushottama, the best personality. He was accompanied by great devotees like Narada, Nanda, and all the principal demigods, led by the heavenly king Indra, and the residents of various upper planetary systems such as Sivaloka, Gandharvaloka, and Charnaloka, situated on both sides of the Lord and behind him as well. These devotees offered him prayers continuously. Should we call Brahma?